Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone phone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Dr. Messner, please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Caring for Your Loved One with Cancer. And today's program is Bristol Myers Squibb and a grant from Genentech. And I really want to thank them for their support to this program. Now, we have many of you on the call today. There's over 300 participants on the call, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada, France, Nepal, South Africa, and the United Kingdom, so it's a global call as well. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now, our first speaker is Dr. Nina Kapoor-Hinson, and Dr. Hinson is supportive care nurse practitioner, advanced practice provider manager, supportive care, geriatric oncology and integrative medicine, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Ms. Hinson will be addressing definition of a caregiver, what research tells us about caregivers' well-being, care coordination, challenges and tips, and challenges of caregiving for an older adult, younger adult, and cancer survivor, and the increasing role of telemedicine. It's now my pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Kapoor-Hinson.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and it's my pleasure to be here with you all today. So I'll start off with what is a caregiver, as very basic. So, when we speak about a caregiver of a person with cancer, we're typically referring to what we call an informal caregiver. This would be an unpaid loved one who provides physical and emotional support to a person with cancer during and after treatment. Caregivers can be family members and they can be friends. They work closely with the patient's medical team as well as other family and friends to organize and support care needs of patients. Caregivers can live with, nearby, or further away from the patient. And depending on their location, caregivers may prioritize different aspects of care. Some things that caregivers may help with include bathing, dressing, toileting, mobility, administering medications, housework, shopping, cooking, finances, making appointments, providing transportation, providing emotional support, managing side effects of treatments, and assisting with treatment decisions. Informal caregivers are a critical source of care for cancer patients, with many providing 30 to 40 hours of care per week. So what does research tell us about caregivers and their well-being? The 2020 report from the National Alliance for Caregiving and AARP showed a high prevalence of informal caregivers in the United States. There are many positive aspects of caregiving, including a sense of fulfillment, establishment of extended social networks, and most importantly, learning more about yourself, your loved one, and enhancing the meaning in both of your lives. On the other hand, there can be challenges. Caregivers may not be adequately prepared to meet the needs of patients, and many report a moderate to high level of stress related to their caregiving responsibilities. Evidence shows that cancer caregiving is intense, episodic, and has a profound impact on a caregiver's well-being and quality of life. And family caregivers were in worse health in 2020 compared to 2015. Some negative impacts that are associated with being a caregiver include depressed mood, feeling burdened, social isolation, loss of self-identity, and sleep deprivation. There can also be financial burdens and social consequences, including disruption of routine, and a sense of interpersonal loss. You may need to take time off from work or leave work altogether. Caregiving needs for cancer patients can last for more than a few months, and caregivers may feel overwhelmed or burnt out over time. So identifying caregiver burden and supporting your well-being is crucial to enhancing the overall well-being of cancer patients. So here are some tips that can help with the caregiving burden that you may be feeling. First and foremost, take care of yourself. It ensures your ability to care for your loved one. Prioritize your responsibilities and take a break from cancer. Make time for yourself. Don't neglect your personal life and try to keep up with your routine as possible. Eat healthy meals, get enough rest, exercise, and take your medications as prescribed. Don't ignore your own health and wellness. Ask for help from other family and friends, the medical team, and seek professional help if needed. Consider joining a caregiver support group. Second tip is to educate yourself. The ever-changing landscape of cancer can be overwhelming to navigate. To learn about cancer, cancer treatments, and side effects, the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, also known as the NCCN, has a free resource called the NCCN Guidelines for Patients. This site includes a comprehensive list of cancers in English and multiple other languages. The information provided is concise, written in plain language, and contains questions for you to engage your healthcare team with. The third tip is to consider any financial strain. If you're experiencing financial hardship because of caregiving, engage your healthcare team and your social work team to identify resources and tailor the healthcare plan to help meet your specific needs. Tip number four is to establish and maintain a care plan. This can be an invaluable tool that saves time and optimizes care for your loved one. This should include health conditions, medications, all healthcare providers, emergency contacts, and caregiver resources. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, also known as the CDC, has a caregiving care plan template on their website that you can fill in directly and print out for yourself. Tip number five is share time and special moments with the loved one that you're caring with cancer. Often, people become closer as you face challenges together. Tip number six is consider creating a caregiving team. Delegate tasks to others and accept help when offered. Insurance-covered assistance, along with hiring help, may be an option to assist with certain custodial tasks like bathing and mobility. And the last tip I'll offer for now is to engage palliative care. If your loved ones or your quality of life is significantly impaired due to cancer or cancer treatments, palliative care can provide support through comprehensive assessment of distress and assistance to optimize well-being throughout the cancer trajectory. So now I'll shift to challenges of caring for an older adult. Adults aged 65 and older are more likely to have cancer alongside other health concerns. They are also more likely to have problems with memory and thinking. Challenges faced by caregivers of older adults include balancing caregiving needs with your job and the needs of your immediate family. You may live far away from your loved one needing care. You may need to balance your own health conditions with your loved ones. When caring for older adults, it is important to ensure that all health conditions your loved one has are being attended to. Also, being proactive about cancer-related symptom management and ensuring compliance with necessary medications to optimize their overall health and symptom control related to cancer will allow patients to fare better through treatments and, in turn, reduce caregiver stress. Assess for and mitigate any falls risk. Falls can severely and negatively impact the overall health of a patient and set them back from essential treatments. review finances and legal documents to help plan how to pay bills, and who will make decisions if your loved one cannot. Lastly, you may have different ideas about what is the best treatment for your loved one. If your loved one is able to decide with their healthcare team, respect their right to make their own choices. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about challenges of caregiving for a younger adult. For persons aged 15 to 39 comprise a special population within oncology care called adolescents and young adults, or AYAs. During this period, a transformation occurs where AYAs move towards autonomy, become independent from their parents, form their identity, explore intimacy, finish their education, start their careers, and start families. A cancer diagnosis is truly not expected and disrupts this process significantly. Cognitive capabilities and emotional maturation in this population may not be fully developed. There are unique stressors aside from the cancer diagnosis itself, like confronting the risk of infertility or death at a young age. Many AYAs are treated with curative intent, and the long-term needs that they have may continue into survivorship and extend over years. Caregivers may be partners, parents, siblings, and friends. Balancing the care of an AYA patient along with a caregiver's job and possibly homework or care of other children pose additional challenges and leave little time to rest in between responsibilities. Younger cancer patients and their caregivers tend to be more stressed due to these age-related challenges, and research demonstrates a strong need for emotional help and help attending to their own needs. Simply acknowledging the struggle and difficulty of the situation is supportive to these caregivers. Support from others in a caregiving team is also perceived as very helpful. Now I'm going to shift to challenges for caregiving for a cancer survivor. It is important for caregivers to be aware that although cancer treatment may have ended, cancer survivors may still be dealing with several challenges, including long-term side effects from treatment, coping with a new normal and loss of prior abilities, fear of recurrent cancer, and just being able to get back to day-to-day life. Being aware of feelings that may come up for you during this time when you may have been expecting care needs to be diminished is helpful to cope with the ongoing needs of your loved one. Continue to make time for yourself and allow others to help you. And lastly, I'll talk with you a little bit about the increasing role of telemedicine in the care and its support of caregivers. Telehealth is a very helpful and effective tool in supporting the needs of caregivers. There is improved access to attend visits with patients and actively participate in medical decision making. Caregivers may be able to participate without taking time off from work or traveling if they are a long distance caregiver. Telehealth, in place of in-person visits when possible, can reduce the cost and time required to transport loved ones to and from appointments. Telemedicine also improves access to interventions that directly help caregiver strain, including psychological interventions and support group access. The ease of access and reduced financial barriers can increase uptake of services and improve both caregiver and patient quality of life. So I'll turn back to you, Dr. Messner. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Kapoor-Hansen. That was really wonderful. Just you're the first speaker, and you really set the stage for today's program, identifying so many issues that I know will come up during the Q&A. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. And Dr. Palos is former Clinical Protocol Administration Manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. She's also an author and researcher in caregiving, health care disparities, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing family, partners, sibling, and friend communication, stresses on family, partners, friends, siblings, friends, and loved ones, coping with holidays, birthdays, special occasions, managing family, friends, partners, and traditions, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth telemedicine appointments, including technology and prepared list of questions. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for the opportunity to participate in this call on caring for a loved one with cancer. Ms. Kapoor Hinson established a great foundation for today's discussion. She provided an excellent update on caregivers, the definitions, and then all of the challenges and rewards and stressors that go along with that. She also gave us a glimpse into what telemedicine is all about. As I reviewed the topics for today's call, I noticed a few common themes. Those themes include caregivers, of course, care coordination, and conversations, all related to the cancer experience. Interestingly, at the core of these topics, but perhaps not openly stated, is communication. Research indicates that communication between cancer patients, family caregivers, friends, partners, and the healthcare team members is critical in managing family tensions and regulating coping mechanisms during the cancer experience. Open and constructive communication can reduce caregiving burden, which you heard our previous speaker talk about. It also, though, can promote intimacy between cancer patients and their caregivers and improve the physical and mental health of both patients and caregivers. Yet cancer patients encounter challenges in communicating openly with family members and their providers. One reason is that every individual has unique communication needs and preferences that vary throughout the cancer journey. Preferences and needs will vary on who the communication targets. Is it the patient only, the family, their spouse or partner, their coworker? For example, how parents tell their children about their cancer diagnosis will differ on how they share that information with coworkers or other people they interact with. Another factor that affects communication is the treatment. What are they going to talk about? The content. Is it the treatment? Is it emotional support they need? Is it disease-related information or daily life? And communication for sure also depends on the preferred communication style, verbal, nonverbal, language, cultural, method of delivery, or what stage of the cancer journey a patient may be experiencing. Also, the other factors are communication channels. For example, is it going to be face-to-face? Is it going to be through a telephone, a Zoom call, or another form of the survivorship journey? In the next few moments, I'll briefly address the following points. What are the stressors and rewards of caregiving, how you can prepare for some of those things, and summarize with tips on how to prepare for a teleconference call. So you've heard quite a bit about rewards and stressors, and I'm sure many of you identified with them as our previous speaker stated them. Now, studies, though, I'd like to, again, to kind of focus on the studies that have shown the benefits of being a caregiver. And some of the types have been including the finding acceptance toward life, positive changes in the self-view, a change in interpersonal relationships, and a deeper sense of purpose in life. And the stressors associated, again, you've heard about them. There is evidence, though, that three challenges associated with cancer caregiving for both men and women include neglect of self, changes in the relationship with the person living with cancer, and the consequences then on the caregiver, such as fatigue, sleep problems, and others. There is no doubt that being a cancer caregiver puts one on a roller coaster of emotions, and that's normal. It's important to realize when stress becomes overwhelming, it is helpful to find ways with that stress. And the speaker after me, Ms. Smith, is going to talk about some of those. As we heard, caregivers often feel that they must try to maintain many roles at one time and yet still have a normal life. What is a normal life? And this becomes particularly important when it is time to celebrate special times and maintain meaningful or cultural traditions. So how does a caregiver and their family members keep up with special events and wonderful traditions? We know that caregivers and their families often find themselves struggling to keep up with these activities when a loved one is diagnosed with cancer. So I'd like to begin by addressing some strategies or sharing some tips on how to deal and cope with holidays and special events. First, you, your partners, and your family and your friends can create new traditions. Even if you cannot be there in person, some of these activities can become new traditions for you, your loved ones, and your families. So this is a good time, for example, that you might want to share the roles that maybe were traditionally yours. If you were the event planner, the cook, the caregiver, the hostess, maybe you can share those roles with different folks in your family. Second, remember you and your family can prepare your own video clips of past holidays. You can give a snapshot or a book of snapshots of memories from the past and share them with your loved ones. So even if you don't celebrate the way you did before, you still have these types of special memories. Third, if you can't travel to family celebrations, set up a web camera so you can actually see your loved one. Face-to-face is very easy, especially if you have a younger generation in there, that make it even easier. You can set up Skype or Zoom, and it's a wonderful way to keep in touch with a loved one across the miles. Communications such as these approaches give you an opportunity to be present and to be a part of the celebration. During holidays, celebrations, medical emergencies, and even natural disasters can also occur. So be prepared for these unexpected situations. For example, you might want to know if you get to travel, where the closest emergency room is located and what services are provided. What about the insurance coverage that they'll let you have or not have, and other specific details about obtaining services. And be sure to ask about the types of documents that you will need. The next core element is to decide who will support you during appointments. This step will optimize your coordination of your care. So you need to start, it would be helpful to begin your discussion of who is going to support you as early as possible. This step is not as simple as one would imagine. It can cause conflict or cooperation among family members. That's why it's practical to discuss this topic as early as possible and be proactive rather than reactive. Second, using telehealth or going by mail, phone, video, whatever the technology is now becoming a trend or in the mainstream of care. This approach can be a bit more challenging when deciding who to include in these types of appointments. As I mentioned earlier, the more prepared you are for an appointment, the smoother your visit will be. If a visit is a person-to-person format, before your visit, select which member or caregiver you wish to include in your appointment. That selection will depend on key factors, such as whether you need someone to be a pair of ears, whether you need a primary caregiver to be present, and whether instructions for in-home care will be needed. And then if there is a language difference, a translator may be needed, and not a family member, but a translator from the facility where you're getting your care. If a telemedicine visit is planned, there's a few other preparation steps that are needed. If you're uncomfortable with the technical aspects of this type of visit, it can be helpful to include a family member who is comfortable and knowledgeable about using electronic devices or software, such as the computer versus an iPhone versus software programs such as Zoom or WebEx. By taking an active role in your health care, in your own health care, your team and you will be able to make out of your appointment. Remember to be prepared. So you can do this by first choose your technology or your channel of communication for your call. Is it helpful for you to want to use the computer, the laptop, the smartphone, or tablet? It will also matter if the method that you choose is going to be used with Apple, Google, Windows, or is it going to be Android-based? Because some little things may differ depending on which method you use. You want to have a reliable internet connection. This is key to having those types of teleconferences and telehealth appointments. Before your appointment, you want to be sure to ask your physician's office also about the technology setup they prefer to use. Some doctors don't have access to all the bells and whistles of telemedicine. They may want to just do a face-to-face on a phone, or they may just want to talk to you, not see you, but like what we're doing on this teleconference right now. You hear the voices, and you're able to communicate this way. It's also helpful to know if you need to download an app, because you may need to create a new account for that app. You should ask for a contact number in case there's a problem during your telemedicine visit. Doing these types of activities will reduce the stress of managing your technology during the actual telemedicine visit. You want to choose a quiet, private place. Find a place for your appointment so you can hear your physician and they in turn can hear you. This reduces distractions and interruptions, making your appointment more productive. Another thing that's very helpful is to prepare your medical history. Go over any pre-existing conditions you have. Just as in an in-person visit, having accurate medical history available is helpful for your physician or your provider during their evaluation. This would include any personal family history, environmental history, lifestyle, job history, changes in medication, any new conditions that may have come up. So if you have that information available ahead of time, if you prepare it ahead of time, it'll make your appointment be more efficient and more helpful. So my final message is this: just do the best you can. Whether you're a patient, caregiver, or provider, be good to yourself. Keep tabs on your own physical and mental health. I believe you'll hear all of the speakers mention how important that is. Do not neglect yourself. Schedule a time for yourself to relax, read a book, take a nap, go for a walk, or even try some yoga, meditation, or journaling. Or just take a moment to do nothing. Just sit there and just relax for a moment. Even if it's 2 or 3 moments, it's amazing how that escape will help. Remind yourself that by taking care of your own health, you and the person you're caring for will reap the benefits of being a healthy caregiver. And perhaps some of our listeners can share how they maintain their own treasured traditions, celebrations, and holidays. Thank you for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. Dr. Messner, this concludes my remarks.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Palos. That was just a wonderful presentation. And I love your suggestion that during the Q&A that we don't just have to ask questions. Please, any of you who have a tip that you would like to share with others that worked for you, that would be nice for us to hear too. So thank you so much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, as well as some tips from our participants of things that they found helpful as well. So thank you. Thank you very much. And our next speaker is Ms. Dina Smith, and Ms. Smith is an oncology social worker, and she's our cancer care caregiver program coordinator. And Ms. Smith will be addressing long-distance caregiving, practical tips to manage caregiver stress, and strategies for self-care, cancer care's free programs and services, and our Hope Line number, as well as our website. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. So I want to start out by mentioning that caregiving can look, feel, and mean different things for different people. Some identify as short-distance caregivers, meaning they perhaps live in the same household or in the same town as their loved one. Or perhaps they are long-distance caregivers, meaning they live across town, across state, or even across the country. You may identify as a child taking care of a parent, a spouse taking care of a spouse, or a parent taking care of a child. You could even be a friend or a neighbor taking care of a loved one or friend. You may be more of an emotional caregiver, meaning you more so provide a shoulder to cry on or a listening ear. or perhaps you provide more practical caregiving help, such as transporting your loved one to and from doctor's appointments or administering medications. So I say all of this because no matter how you identify as a caregiver, there is no right or wrong way to be a caregiver. And remember that any effort that you're putting into the caregiving process is more than enough, even if you are just helping with one simple task. So of course, each type of caregiving comes with its own stressors. Your relationship with your loved one may change. Your daily responsibilities or priorities may change. Annual traditions and get-togethers may look different. You may experience symptoms of burnout, such as fatigue, sleep changes, weight or appetite fluctuations, sadness, loneliness, anxiousness, resentment, guilt. But remember, there are so many ways to alleviate this kind of stress, and we want to practice these forms of self-care before we experience any form of burnout. So in order to do this, we need to practice self-care. But what is self-care? What does that look like? It can take the shape and form of so many things, and it is what is ever most convenient, unique, and helpful for you. For instance, carve out time for yourself each and every day. And if not every day, at least once a week. Do you have 15 minutes in a day just to close the door and sit in silence? Do you have 3 minutes to maybe listen to a meditative exercise? Try to pencil in some time for yourself at least once a week. Be prepared and organized. So for instance, ask the oncologist questions, write down appointments, reach out to friends and family members. Perhaps you may take more of an active role, and while you're also writing down information from the oncologist, maybe you are doing most of the talking in the doctor's office, and that's how you help as a caregiver, and that's completely okay. Perhaps your form of self-care is exercise and eating healthy. I also encourage you, as the former speakers noted, to seek counseling. There are so many counseling options out there, such as one-on-one counseling, support group counseling, and even peer matching. I also encourage you to say yes to yourself and no to others. So I know that sounds like a selfish act, but it's really not. It's ensuring that you're prioritizing yourself, you're giving more energy to yourself, less to others, so that in turn you can rejuvenate yourself and provide better support to your loved one. In addition, I also encourage you to practice meditative exercises. I'm going to bring up three that I really love to practice myself and I love to teach to my clients. The first is box breathing, where you breathe in through your nose for 4 seconds. You hold that breath for 4 seconds. You exhale the breath through your mouth for 4 seconds, and then you repeat. So you can think that all sides of a box are equal in measurement, and that's exactly how you should think about your breathing. Another meditative exercise is the body scan. So what you can do is that you can listen to a script from apps such as Headspace or Calm, or even you can just type in body scan on YouTube. And what the person will do who's reading the script is that they will guide you through thinking about all different parts of your body and providing breath to that part of the body to make you feel more in tune with your body, more present, and more focused on yourself rather than external sources at that time. My final meditative exercise that I want to note is guided imagery. And again, you can find scripts on apps such as Headspace or Calm, or even type it in on YouTube, where the reader of the script will guide you through a pleasant image, such as a beach, a forest, a meadow, anything like that. I also want to take the time, though, to acknowledge that long-distance caregiving in particular could be as, if not more, difficult than short-distance caregiving. And even though you are long-distance caregiving and maybe not providing as much hands-on support as a short-distance caregiver, I still highly encourage you to take time for yourself, prioritize yourself, and absolutely try out these meditative exercises. So as a long-distance caregiver, you may not know how exactly to help your loved one, and you could be experiencing guilt for not being physically present with your loved one. You may not be familiar with the local resources available to your loved one, and you may even experience burnout symptoms, as I mentioned, which are very valid for a long-distance caregiver and oftentimes does happen. There are so many ways, though, that you can still, as a long-distance caregiver, help. So, for instance, set up care for your loved one through online platforms such as My Cancer Circle, Lots of Helping Hands, or Meal Train, where you can set up a profile for your loved one, invite friends and family, and make a schedule, a calendar, so that people can sign up for different things. Maybe a meal is needed on Monday night, or maybe your loved one needs to be transported to the doctor on a Friday and they're looking for a ride. This is an easy way for people to sign up and be in the know about what's going on. I also encourage you to phone in when your loved one goes to the doctor's appointment. And of course, get your loved one's permission and then just be ready to dial your loved one at the appointment time and be on speakerphone so that you can be virtually present while the doctor is talking to your loved one and vice versa. You can also research and set up practical and emotional resources for your loved one through case management services. And then, of course, you can also set up check-ins with your loved one via FaceTime, text, phone call, or Zoom. Remember, all forms of caregiving aren't easy, so please be patient with yourself. I invite you to consider, what are three admirable qualities that you have learned about yourself while caregiving? Lastly, honor the sacrifice that you have made for your loved one and reflect upon how your values may have changed or stayed the same while you've been caregiving for your loved one. Lastly, I do want to take a moment to identify cancer care resources, because a lot of what I mentioned, we do offer here at Cancer Care. So for instance, we have limited forms of financial assistance. We also have one-on-one and live support group counseling services for New York and New Jersey residents. We also have online support groups, meaning typing-based support groups for people nationwide. That's for patients, caregivers, and bereaved folks. We also offer many community-based programs, as well as educational workshops like the Connect Education Workshop you're a part of today. We also offer resource navigation, which is kind of like case management. It gets you connected to resources local to your area, and your loved one can also call in to request this as well. We also offer lots of educational material, and recently we have a new program called My Trialist, which informs caregivers and patients of clinical trials and gets them connected to a clinical trial that potentially they would qualify for. Those are all of the services that we offer here at Cancer Care. And if you are interested in signing up for any of them or interested in learning more, I recommend that you call our main number, which is the Hope Line. It is 1-800-813-4673, or you can go to our website, www.cancercare.org. And with that, I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Smith. That was really excellent. Just an outstanding presentation and lots of resources for our participants to take advantage of, and lots of tips as well, and self-care tips. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, and thank you. Thank you so much. And now we have time for the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Krista to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And we have a question. So this is a question, interesting question. It's possible that all the speakers want to weigh in on this one. How do you work through the guilt of taking time of yourself as a caregiver? Why don't we start with Dr. Paulus?
Good question. And that is a thought that I hear many of our caregivers express, and also the patients themselves, because they say, you know, I know my spouse, or I know my daughter feels bad about, you know, taking the time to go and do the exercise program or whatever. So guilt, I think, is kind of a overlying, or it arches the whole kind of cancer experience. So one of the things you can do is just sit down with the person that you're caring for, the loved one diagnosed with cancer, and just have some discussion about this. That is, and I think another thing that comes up with communication, people sometimes are hesitant to have open and frank, or transparent, that's a word you hear now quite a bit, communication about some of the things that they feel uncomfortable with. And that's okay, but don't let it stop you from sitting down and opening up a discussion about, all right, you know, this is going to be challenging for all of us. What is it that I can do, you know, to help you during this? And as the patient, what you can also then say is, or might be helpful to say is, you know, I don't want you to feel guilty about taking care of yourself. In a way, what you're doing is giving your loved one permission that it's okay. And when that permission is given, I've noticed that people feel a bit more comfortable. I don't believe I've ever heard anybody say, I got rid of all my guilt. No, but at least you won't feel as guilty. It's a normal reaction to taking care of yourself, because we're taught that as caregivers, what do? 24/7, you care. So I hope that's helpful information. It'll be interesting to see what our other speakers suggest.
Well, thank you so much. And Ms. Smith, do you want to comment on that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. Paulus pretty much said it all. Guilt is such a common feeling to experience as a caregiver, and I say that because I don't want you to feel isolated. It's a very normal feeling to experience. And guilt also means that you care. You care for your loved one. You care about the well-being of your loved one. But just remember a couple of things. So number one, I always like to remind caregivers that more than likely their loved one wants them, meaning the caregiver, to spend time for themselves, you know, do what you love, go for that exercise class, or go get together with friends. Remember that doing this, as I mentioned, is not selfish. It's actually rejuvenating you so that you can become a better caregiver for your loved one. And in addition, if you are feeling guilty, perhaps have that conversation with your loved one, as Dr. Paulus mentioned. Have open communication, because perhaps after you talk about the guilt with your loved one and you realize that there isn't anything to feel guilty about, you're going to feel a lot better doing the things that you love, either by yourself or with others other than your loved one.
Excellent. And Ms. Kapoor Hansen, do you want to add anything?
Sure. I mean, Ms. Smith and Dr. Paulus, I agree with everything that they said. I would just add that maybe having that conversation with your loved one, and, you know, having them understand and give, you know, their blessing to you taking care of yourself is a way to allow them to take care of you as well. Understanding that they appreciate all that you're doing for them, this is one way that they can allow you to take care of yourself. And always remember, you can't pour from an empty cup. So if you don't have anything to give, you know, as Ms. Smith mentioned, you won't be able to be the most effective caregiver as you want to be. Thank you.
That's a great metaphor. You can't pour from an empty cup. That's true, you can't. That's a wonderful thing for people to take away from this, to remember that you do have to be, you have to take care of yourself, to take care of someone else. Excellent. And we have another question. And this question, I'll start with Ms. Smith. What counseling resources are available for individuals who have cancer? what counseling resources are available for caregivers whose loved ones have cancer. Did you want to take that one to start with, Ms. Smith?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned, Cancer Care offers free short-term counseling to patients and caregivers, but we only offer that to New York and New Jersey residents. If you are outside of New York and New Jersey, we do also offer those typing-based support groups, and we do offer those to both patients and caregivers. We have lots of options on our website, cancercare.org. If you do not reside in New York and New Jersey and you are trying to look for those live counseling services, I always refer clients to, I believe it's called Cancer Care Connection. There is also Red Door Community or Gilda's Club. I believe that they have chapters all around the U.S. And then on a broader scope, I also recommend to people the organizations Hello Alma and Psychology Today and Headway. There you can find therapists who take your insurance. And you can also filter to see who specializes in oncology or chronic illnesses. So those are the main resources that I would suggest.
And I just want to let everybody know that any resource we mentioned, you will be getting a SurveyMonkey in a couple of days after the program. But nevertheless, that SurveyMonkey, although it's an evaluation of the program, will also include any resource that any of the speakers mentioned. So all the resources that have been mentioned prior to the Q&A and then the ones that are being mentioned, particularly now during the Q&A, will be resources mentioned for you and how to contact them with the phone numbers and websites, so you'll have that information. And Ms. Kapoor Hinson, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Ms. Smith covered it all.
Okay. And Dr. Palos, do you want to add anything?
I think Ms. Smith did a wonderful, I don't think, I know she did a wonderful job of the resources. The only thing that I would mention, if there are any veterans on our call today, I would recommend that you speak to your benefits office, because I know the caregiver, the veterans have been putting a lot of effort into programs for the caregiver, respite programs and others. So definitely let your benefits office call them from the VA and let them know that, you know, you have someone who's been diagnosed with cancer or you yourself have been diagnosed with cancer, and what are the type of services that are available for caregivers and their families as well as for the patients.
Excellent. Thank you. Very good idea. And we probably, again, we'll include some veteran resources for everyone also, because it's a very important group and there's a lot of resources for veterans. So thank you. This one I'm going to ask Dr. Palos if you could address it. What are some tips for when cancer is part of a dual diagnosis?
Oh, it becomes even more of a challenge for everyone. The patients themselves who's experiencing, say, for example, arthritis and cancer or hypertension and diabetes or any of those chronic diseases that are there along with the cancer diagnosis. It's challenging for the caregiver. Perhaps they need to learn new skills, not only in how to care for someone who has cancer, like catheter care or some type of that, but also then to add on perhaps additional medications to help control that particular chronic condition that's been diagnosed. And then it becomes even more challenging for our providers, because they not only will deal with your cancer diagnosis, but then that other comorbid condition that you may have. And it just makes it more challenging. So, but I can't stress enough, communication is so critical during this time in your life. I have spoken to so many patients that say, you know, I forgot to tell my doc about the new medication that they put me on for my high cholesterol. Well, even something like that can make a difference in your care. So communicate any changes that your loved one or you yourself as the patient have experienced, any new, like I said, comorbid conditions, medications, any change that you think may be boring or non-essential. We don't know until you let your providers know. And your providers are going to appreciate that type of information because they want to give you the best care also.
Excellent. And another question for Ms. Kapoor Hinson. I'm trying to ask for help as my mother's caregiver, but she does not trust anyone but me. I've been interviewing nurses to help her out because I can't provide all the care she needs. How can I introduce someone new to her if she won't even try to trust them?
So that's a really tough situation that you're in, and I really empathize with you. It's going to take time, and I think as you being the most trusted person in her life, I think having an honest conversation with her saying, hey, Mom, I really am at a point where I'm not able to provide you with all the care that you need, and in order for me to continue to care for you, I need help. This is the only way that I can get you the care that you need. So I need you to partner with me on this. And I think that oftentimes if people who usually the reason why they don't want to allow other people into their care is because it's hard, right? It's often this care is very private. It's very personal. They want the person that they trust most, the person that knows them, to be the one delivering all this care for them, even if it's not necessarily, manageable all by one person. But if they understand where you're coming from and why you need the help and that it's to help you, oftentimes they'll come around and allow for some of that assistance. Also finding out what specifically she may not trust. So maybe she wants you to focus on certain aspects of her care but may allow other aspects of her care to be helped by someone else. That might be another way to kind of get someone in there who can then hopefully take on more responsibility as time goes on.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's excellent. And this question is for Ms. Smith. What are some healthy ways to deal with your anger and sadness with the loss associated with your loved one's diagnosis?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. So I think what you may be referring to is what we call anticipatory grief. So anticipatory grief is kind of what it sounds like. It means that you are grieving the life that you were going to have with your loved one. So maybe that means retirement plans or fertility plans. And that's a very normal feeling. You could also be experiencing grief, which is you're grieving the life that you once had with your loved one, the life pre-diagnosis. So I encourage you to try to think about ways in which you could harness that, what you really truly enjoyed with your loved one in the past and how to manipulate that and use it in the present. So for instance, if date nights maybe look a little different now, rather than going out to a restaurant if your loved one isn't up for it, perhaps ordering in and from your favorite restaurant and setting up the dining room as a really nice, comfy area with lots of candles, some flowers, a really cute atmosphere, get creative with it. Just because you're living a life that you didn't plan for doesn't mean that the life that you were living has to be gone forever. The other thing that I would mention is that if you are experiencing feelings of sadness, then I would certainly encourage you to find counseling. Definitely find some counseling for yourself to kind of explore those feelings. Peer matching is also a great idea as well, where you are matched up with another caregiver who has been in your exact same situation. May feel good to kind of talk with someone who has been in your exact same shoes and knows exactly what you're going through. But if you're experiencing some intense emotions, I would definitely encourage you to seek counseling. And if you are already in counseling, make an intention to bring it up in your next few sessions with your therapist.
Excellent. Thank you. And one of our participants actually has left us information about the veterans. Veterans actively enrolled in VA health care services, they should reach out to their primary care social worker to be screened for possible in-home and respite services. The VA also has a national caregiver program that is available for caregiver support programs, and it's vacaregiver.va.gov. We will send that resource to all of you so you have that. I want to thank our participants for giving us this information. I'm going to ask each of our speakers as we conclude the program today to give us some takeaways from today's program, starting with Ms. Nina Kapoor-Hinson, then Dr. Palos, and then Ms. Smith. So just a minute or two takeaway of what you'd like people to take away from today's program.
Thank you. So I would really urge all of you to look into all the different ways that you can make your life easier. We have a lot of emerging technologies, including telemedicine and growth of different types of technologies that can help make your life easier. You don't have to travel necessarily to all appointments. You don't have to travel necessarily to get care for yourself, you can save a lot of time and money if you utilize these. So don't think that you're limited. Ask if there are other ways that you can engage in the type of care that you need through technology.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Palos.
I would just like our callers to remember that effective cancer care really depends on communication. Whatever stage you're at in your experience, whomever you're speaking to, whether it be your provider, your healthcare team, I know that they're very multidisciplinary now, your friends, your family, your coworkers, yourself even, communication is key to this whole experience. So do not be hesitant to share your feelings and your thoughts. It's difficult for some people to do that, but you can start with baby steps, you know, and then open up to the more sensitive topics. But communicate. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Palos and Ms. Smith.
Yeah, so I want to say that I want you all to be proud of the fact that you showed up here today. The fact that you showed up here shows that you care. You care about your loved one, and you care about providing the best help for your loved one. But if you took away anything from today, it's to absolutely prioritize yourself so that, you know, you can help your loved one. And whether that means, for instance, dialing into your loved one's doctor's appointment or taking time to just leave the house for a walk, practicing self-care and putting yourself first will in turn help your loved one, whether you're caregiving from a short distance or long distance.
Thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers. You've really been extraordinary. And although we've done this program before, today's program was really fantastic, both the questions that people asked And also the fact that we got some feedback from our participants as well, and as well as our speakers just being so fantastic today. And I do want to just comment on this program today. Now, unfortunately, we're not able to take everyone's questions. We just didn't. There's too many questions for us to be able to handle in the time that we had. So I want to comment on that. For those of you who asked a question, for those who have a question yes to ask in queue, or for those of you who have a question that you're thinking of asking, I would like all of you to go back to your treating healthcare team and ask your question of them. Because they know you the best, and to some extent, they also may be able to offer some other resources. Remember, your healthcare team consists not only of your oncologist or surgeon or radiation oncologist, but also includes oncology nursing, oncology social workers, physical therapists, patient navigators. It really consists of, and financial navigators, it consists of many different personnel. And even though your appointment may be with your doctor, if you ask a question, they may have resources in the institution that you're going to that you may not be aware of. So please do take advantage of that as well. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.